and the fly goes down river, and this fish ferociously comes up, and like as he takes the fly, he jumps out of the water, and he didn't get it, right? Mm. And the fly is still floating on the water. Yeah. And a second later, there's no way it could have been the same fish. The water was still all roiled up.
Yeah.
And another fish comes up and grabs it, and we hooked that one. So it's just the amount of fish in those pools by times, you know, that are eager to take a fly is unbelievable.
It's phenomenal.
Hey there, thanks for tuning in to episode 27 of the Maritime Outdoorsman Podcast. Today we're going to have a repeat guest on. Chris Sinclair comes back. I managed to sit down with him not so long ago, and I wanted to hear about his experiences up north. He's been guiding for trophy brook trout and Atlantic salmon in Labrador, and I just wanted to sit down with him and hear about some of his experiences up north. So this is kind of a neat episode. So here you go. Here's my conversation with Chris Sinclair about his adventures up north guiding.
Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
We finally meet
in
person.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Just down here, Windsor way, you're doing some work down this way right now.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good time to catch up. And I know last time we talked was back in 2016, and you were, I think, getting ready to head off, go north, and work as a guide up there. So I guess let's hear about some of your adventures up there.
Yeah, so I've been working up in Labrador as a fly fishing guide for the last 4 years. I worked at multiple lodges. Currently, I work at Crooks Lake Lodge and Flowers River Lodge. Brook trout for Crooks Lake, brook trout and pike, and Atlantic salmon and Arctic char at Flowers River Lodge. Crooks Lake is 90 kilometers southeast of Goose Bay, so it's all the flights are out of Goose Bay, and it's an amazing place up there. Labrador is something to behold. It's underrated for the actual culture there. It's much more than just a world-class fishing destination. The people there are great, and it's something that, for me, that I love wilderness culture and that how it's so ingrained in their in their community there, than the individuals. I think it's, you know, really rubbed off on me. So
nice.
And the fishing up there is unbelievable. So
yeah, I mean, you know, we see the pictures and everything, but I haven't had the chance to get up there just yet, maybe in a few years or so, but anybody that I know that's gone, it's world class, right?
Yeah, and it's awesome. The dry fly fishing at Crooks Lake for, you know, big brook trout, 4 to 7 pounds, and even bigger than that, is crazy. Like, the hatches can be unbelievable. It's actually funny. This year was a bit different than any other year that I've been up there. We had some good hatches on the lake right into the end of July, midday, you know, hot sun, and some mayflies were popping off, and the fish were everywhere all over the lake. It was, you know, you look one straight line, you can see 30 fish up, and, you know, and that was like that on a couple places of the lake. So we have an amazing resource there.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, really. It's coming from Nova Scotia, you know, catching, you know, a big trout in Nova Scotia, you might get a couple 20-inch, you know, wild brookies, but you'll get some bigger sea trout. But coming from there,
yeah,
and, you know, catching a good brookie, like my good brookies are like 16-17 inches.
That's a fantastic,
you know, brookie. It's a really good brook trout for you know, some places. But then again, you go down to a little brookie, you catch 10 and 12 inches,
right?
But those really aren't even talked about there.
No.
You know, they're there, but that's not it's just if it's not over 3 pounds, then it's not, you know,
it's not worth talking about.
No, it's, you know,
that's wild. So this was how many years you've been guiding up there?
I've been guided up there for 4 years. I started at Crooks Lake, and then I did a little stint at Igloo later on that summer, and then I went to Crooks Lake again the next year, and then I worked at Cooper's Minipi Camps, and it's roughly the same distance away from Goose Bay, but more south, and they have some really big brookies there. Not as many, but you, if you get one, you know, you're going to get a real big one. And then I did that for 2 years. I did Crookes the following year again, and then went to Menippi. And then after that, I was lucky to be a part of a large expedition we did on the upper Kinnaretok River with a small film company called Tight Loops Fly from the eastern seaboard of the United States. And we basically did, I was the guide, and we went up and did a canoeing and fishing trip and made a film about it. It's called Big Land.
Nice.
And it's a really in touch with nature, in touch with, you know, human connectivity with nature, and the appreciation of wild places and wilderness culture. And, of course, the brook trout there were unbelievable, you know. So many, you know, brook trout, 3 to 6 pounds, and untouched, you know. So it's pretty crazy.
Awesome. And then you, and then from there you've done some Flowers River salmon.
Yeah, so after that I went to Flowers River to do some labor work and fell in love with the river.
Yeah.
Got a chance to do some fishing there before the season ended. And then the following year I went and did Crookes again, so that's my fourth year there. And then I went from directly to Crookes and went to Flowers. I spent 115 days in Waders Strait this year. So
awesome.
I get to see a lot of interesting things. I get to experience true dry fly fishing for summer around Atlantic salmon. And I fell in love with fishing the riffle, or the not fishing, but the clients fishing riffle hitch flies and small dry flies. It's very intimate. It's same as Crookes. Like, you know, we're fishing small dry flies. At Crookes, it's, you can see the fish rising. So it's very, for, I use the word intimate to describe it, and at Flowers River it's much the same because the water is very clear and it is a big river, but when you can see the fish and you know you're making that perfect cast and with sight fishing Atlantic salmon with a dry fly,
doesn't get much better than that.
No, it's unbelievable. And the best fly up there is, you know, Ed Dominey's bee bug, and the bomber version is also pretty good, but in size, you know, 6, 8, and 10, and small flies. You know, Nova Scotia, I grew up in the same areas, and you're used to seeing, you know, one-aught Macintoshes, you know, squirrel wing Macintoshes, or even, like, if you look at the Restigouche, you're using, you know, huge size 2, you know, bombers and bigger. So up there, they do work up there, you know, but the small ones always go small, and then if you can't get them on the small, toss the big one, and the odd time they'll take it, but generally, you know, small Flowers River's known for small flies, 6, 8, and 10s, and, you know, mostly size 8 and 10s, even your wet flies.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is it, like, is Flowers known for big salmon, or just good numbers of really nice size salmon, or, you know, like, the average client, you know, they're gonna at least see a fish?
Oh yeah, for sure, yeah. This year we had, you know, high water. There was, fishing was still good, but as the water dropped, the fishing became much better. But the dry, see, it was like we were forced to use wet flies for most of the early part of the season. You know, the dry flies weren't really working. So as the water dropped, we caught a lot of fish on dry flies. And, you know, there was a 40-pounder hook this year. We didn't land it, but, you know, that's a real big fish. And myself, you know, I've guided clients into, we hooked a couple 30-pounders, and we landed, you know, multiple 20-pounders, and, you know, there's lots of growth if there's no salmon in this particular pool on our rotation. And then sometimes you'll hook the odd char in the pools.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You know, we did pretty good on char, even, like, not even fishing them. So
nice.
You catch a lot of fish, you know, between 10 and 15 pounds. You get some 20-pounders, and if you're lucky, you'll get a nice 30-pounder on a dry fly. So
nice.
Yeah, that's
wild.
Unbelievable.
So what can someone expect scenery-wise up there up north?
Well, this summer, it was cold, and we had a lot of snow last winter in Labrador. 20 feet in Goose Bay, so I can only imagine what it was like in Flowers River, but we had snow right into, you know, the end of August, and some of it didn't actually leave in the hills. And it's beautiful, those large, you know, rock outcrops, large hills and mountains, you could call them, really.
Yeah.
You know, still snow on them right into the end of, you know, August, and large portions of snow. It's spectacular. You know, it's always great to get, you know, a client with a, like, 20-pound salmon. With the nice snowy mounds in the background. So
it's like a west or something.
I have cold chills just thinking about it. It's such a such a spiritual, you know, thing, and to be a part of it and to see that every day, you know, maybe I take it for granted a little bit, but you know, doing things like this kind of brings it all back, and you know, talking about it and, you know, feeling the emotions again, you know, it kind of it makes me sitting here with a big grin on my face just thinking about it. You know, wildlife isn't really, you don't see a lot of wildlife really up there, shockingly.
Oh yeah,
but you'll see bears, a lot of bear sign, wolves and bears mostly is what you see. There are some caribou up there, a lot of bird life actually, a lot of birds, Canada goose, Canada geese, you know, lots of waterfowl, green winged teal, things like that, you know, minks, and you'll see the odd otter and pine marten. They're cute. And yeah, like I was saying, we had a really wet year, so the berries didn't actually grow very well this year. They never even really fruited until, you know, September.
That's wild.
Yeah, we didn't have any warm weather this summer until like mid-August.
So you want to bring your long johns?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Oh yeah.
So as long as there's snow in the mountains, I mean, that's providing cold water to the river. So
exactly.
That's good for the fish.
Yeah, and it rained a lot this year too, so that's why we're dealing with high water events. And it, unfortunately, when we get a lot of rain, the river will turn dark.
Right.
Not dark per se. It really, a lot of the riverbank and even the bottom substrate is of clay. So when you get that rain, it'll turn like like kind of a blue tinge almost. The gray tinge, with the colors from the clay. But then that'll clear up quite quick. You can actually catch fish in that. It's not easy, but large chartreuse flies work really well. And then as it clears up, it'll turn like almost like a spadey color, like a dark tannic color, and then within a couple days it's, you know, it's back to its gin clear.
That's wild.
And it's cool to, it's interesting as a guide to adapt your flies to that, you know. You really have to be in tune with that. You're not going to fish a size 10 blunder taker if the water's running you know, high and murky. You'll put on like a Renew Special or a green spay or something like that, you know, a bigger size, and as the water drops, you'll fish like when it starts to get dark, or maybe you'll fish a hair hackle cost boom and rub solo pattern, or you'll put a white wing blue charm on something that'll stick out a bit. Or fly I tied this year is kind of a variant of the Renew Special. We just call it the banana fly. It's chartreuse and yellow, and it was, you know, really doing good. You know, we caught a lot of fish on that.
Nice. Any particular experience or outing that stands out from others maybe for you?
Well, we had this one. We were at the Lower Joneses, or Middle Joneses, I guess. And we had caught a couple fish earlier that day, and the fish were in the river running good. This would have been probably towards the end of July. And my client had rose a fish a couple times. He rose them a couple times on a wet fly. And it was difficult to, you know, find them exactly. And it was, you know, getting close to lunchtime, so I'm like, Dave, let's, you know, wrap this up. I'll give you 5 more casts, kind of thing. And so he made his 4 casts, and on the 5th cast, I said, okay, it's time to go. And no sooner did I get the words out of my mouth, this, you know, nice, you know, almost around 20-pound fish comes up and takes his bee.
Nice.
Number 10, bee bomber. 10. And, you know, you knew immediately that he had it, and you get that vacuum flash and tight line, and the fish zooms down to the towards the bottom of the pool, towards Calvin's Rock, and the reel singing. I have a video of it.
Awesome.
3 jumps, you know, and he's way down there, and the rod, he's putting the pressure on him, and the rod's bent right over, and me and the other client are laughing, and he's fighting this fish, and it was a lot of fun, you know. And we get this tail this fish and get him in the net, and that's one of those shots there at Jones's Mountain with all the snow in the background. I have a really great shot of that fish, and it was, you know, that, you know, that 5th cast thing,
just perfect.
And I got some other stories about, you know, dry fly fishing, sight fishing, at the top pool, on the far side, there's like a slow sloping rock, mm-hmm. flat, I guess we'll call it, but it slopes down towards the main channel. And there's some big rocks that the fish will hang off that. And there was two fish laying quite close together. And I think they were both females. And with one cast, the fly went over one fish. They're laying within a foot of each other. Mm-hmm. And she comes up and looks at it. And then a split second later, the other fish comes up and looks at it and no love.
Yeah.
But that is probably the coolest dry fly spot because you can just see them laying there.
Nice.
We had another one. We floated a bomber downstream, probably like a size 6. I think it was probably a B. And the fly goes downriver, and this fish ferociously comes up, and like as he takes the fly, he jumps out of the water, and he didn't get it, right?
Mm.
And the fly is still floating on the water.
Yeah.
And a second later, there's no way it could have been the same fish. The water was still all roiled up.
Yeah.
And another fish comes up and grabs it, and we hooked that one. So it's just the amount of fish in those pools by times, you know, that are eager to take a fly is unbelievable.
Just phenomenal.
Yeah, and there's big fish up there too. Like we said, there's 30 pounders.
Mm.
It always seems to those ones get away or bend the hook, you know. But I've seen one fish hook this year. It was a proper 4-footer. Yeah, that's, all the 4 feet.
That's a big salmon.
Big hen.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the season, actually, it was near the last day of the season. Hooked on a dry fly at the top of Long Beach. And just one of those places the fish hold in such weird spots in that river. Nothing like I'm used to. Like Nova Scotia, St. Mary's in particular, it's a completely different river for me.
Yeah.
And it's so wide and it's like shallow and you can see the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of times, you know, as a trout fisherman, fish hold behind rocks. Well, they do hold in front of the rocks too, but primarily in the Flowers River, fish hold in front of rocks and you can see them. So if I ask a client to fish that rock, I expect them to start in front of the rock, quite far up in front of the rock too.
Right.
And they'll come up and sometimes you don't even see them. You can just see where there's a bit of roily in the water there, a little bit of current there, and you just flick your fly out there and it comes tight, up he comes, eh?
Awesome.
Yeah. And we had another, I'll tell you another story time.
Absolutely.
We were at, so, well, up in the upper river, there's a place called the Falls, and we have to walk about 1.5 kilometers there from Landslide, which is pretty far from the camp. I think it's 15 kilometers total from the camp to Falls Pool by boat, and then you have to do a couple portages. But the flies were unbelievable. We left that day, and one of my clients was from they're both from Phoenix actually, but one was dressed up in, you know, wool jacket, had his wool balaclava and, you know, winter gloves on. And we get up there and we start hiking and the flies are crazy and we're sweating and panting and going on. We finally get to the pool and it hadn't been fished, the falls hadn't been fished for about 1.5 weeks. And that was part of a 3-day trip that I went up there every day, so I did 90 kilometers in 3 days.
That's a lot.
Which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we went up there and they hooked 7 fish, but they just couldn't land them.
Oh, no.
And then we came down to a pool below the top pool called Gonzo's Reach or Perch, I believe. Anyways, and it was funny. I had previously guided one of these clients at Crooks Lake 2 years previous, and so I was kind of, he was a favorite client of mine, so
mm-hmm.
I said, yes, we'll stop. It was getting towards the end of the day, but yes, we'll stop at Gonzo's.
Right.
There had been fish that had just moved up in there. And we, you know, set anchor, and we started fishing, and they hooked 7 fish at Gonzo's in the hot day in the afternoon, all on dry flies, all on the B. And, you know, they hooked 7 fish and landed 7 fish.
That's phenomenal.
And, you know, some were grills and some were, you know, 10 to 15 pound salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those things that was like, all the flies and, oh, the flies were absolutely terrible. The worst I've ever seen it. And, you know, to work so hard for that, you know, hook 7 fish and lose them earlier on than to, you know, 14 fish, you know.
That's an astounding day.
Yeah. So we ended up landing 7 there. And
nice.
And one nice real male, nice good male and a female there too. And Yeah. I got one of the takes on video for the dry fly, and
nice.
It's one of those, you know, good things. You know, you work hard for your client, and you pay off, and it's, you know, mutually respected, because, you know, I guided him before. We had a great time at Crooks on dry fly fishing for trout, and to bring it all back together, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it's nice when it works out for a really, you know, a nice client, too.
Yeah. A client that, you know, you make, like, for me, I try to, right from the beginning of the week, I try to build a bond with my client, because if there's no mutual respect, then it's not going to be a good week.
Absolutely.
So you... Yeah. Sometimes it's not good to make personal connections with your clients, but personally I enjoy it because it makes my week more enjoyable, and hopefully it makes their week more enjoyable. So, and then you can kind of, if you kind of get to know your client, you kind of know how to, you know, things to say, or how they fish, that's, you know, how they like to fish, or where they like to fish, or if they need to be in the boat, if they don't, if they like rather walk, or things like that. So
yeah,
it's good that way. I really enjoy that part of it, you know, making a emotional connection with another angler is kind of what I do it for, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people, aspiring guides, don't think about that part, you know, and having guided since I was 16, not to the extent that you are, just more on a very part-time basis, but having done enough of it, the majority of the guiding is knowing how to converse and how to treat that person, and everybody's so different, right?
Oh, for sure. You have to be dynamic. You know? You have to be, you know, you have to wear a bunch of different hats when you're up there, not just for talking to people, but for guiding up there. It's not just guiding. It's not just fishing. Like you said, it's, you know, like conversing, and then you have the manual labor of at the camp, you know, doing firewood and that, the other, this, that, and the other thing, and, you know, you could be doing anything, you know.
Yeah,
and I enjoy that part of it. It makes, you know, makes things fun. It keeps things interesting. You know, there's always something new to experience. Awesome. Up there.
That sounds like a fantastic place to be. Anybody listening, you know, interested in checking that out, I'll have some links in the show notes. But definitely give it some thought.
So while talking to Chris, I was thinking it might be interesting to sort of start a series of episodes related to guides, you know, how they became a guide, why they became a guide. And, you know, this episode, you've heard some guiding experience from Chris. In the next episode, episode 28, I'm going to be talking with Perry Monroe about some of his guiding experiences and wisdom. So, yeah, I just wanted to get Chris's explanation of how and when he got into guiding.
So guiding for me has always been something I was interested in as a kid, and I kind of did, like you said, I kind of started guide when I was 15, you know, unprofessionally,
right?
Working at the River Association, and fishermen come in, and, you know, I kind of had an idea of, like, I had a goal, maybe a very soft goal, to, you know, maybe someday be on the new Fly Fisher TV show, and I would never have guessed that it actually would have came true, but this summer, you know, Crooks Lake, we hosted the new Fly Fisher film crew, and Bill Spicer, great fisherman, great man, and we filmed a show this summer, and it was so much fun. I'm passionate about, you know, taking photos and, you know, a little bit of amateur filmmaking, so for me to be a part of something so, you know, big and interesting, and such a large scale, like national television,
yeah,
it was a lot of fun to do that. And I made, you know, Ryan Pizzicala, the videographer, with them, you know, we created a bond together, and me and Bill created a bond together, and and, you know, when we went out on the water, we, you know, I'm sure it's different for them. Sometimes the guides not necessarily aren't a 23-year-old kid who's also interested in filmmaking.
Right.
So it might be a bit difficult for them to do certain shows, but, you know, we talked, and we even set up shots together, and it was probably one of the highlights of my guiding career. And, you know, you have these soft goals when I'm guiding in my career, you know, and something like that. It's like I'm achieving these things without even, you know, just with hard work, and just things are falling into place. And
that's very cool. Yeah, and I'll add a link to that episode, which isn't out yet, but it will be, It might be by the time you're listening to this, whoever it is, for sure. Because I know that I know they had a good time, and I know they spoke very highly of your guiding experience. So that's that's pretty wild.
I'm pretty intense when it comes to dry fly fishing and brook trout, and it's like it's difficult sometimes because I believe I know what's going to work and how the fish react, because I've been there for 4 years, and you know you're on the water every day for 6 or 7 weeks there, and you know how how the hatches progress, and when a fish is like fish behavior for me is so important, like when you're reading the dry fly rise to see if it's an emerger or if it's a dry fly taking fish or you know, which like especially in stillwater in the lakes, you have to read the direction of which he's going and how fast he's moving.
Oh yeah,
I learned that a lot at Manipi from a client who goes there a lot, and he is a fanatic. He hunts brook trout.
Oh yeah,
he won't pick up his fly rod without, you know, seeing a fish, and just that intimacy with I guess I don't have any other word to that would better describe it, but just you and the fish and a fly,
right?
And tricking that fish.
Yeah,
is something I really love, and you know, getting my client into position, and you know, positioning the boat, canoeing the boat, anchoring the boat with a paddle, holding in position in high winds or you know, current or anything like that.
And it's an art.
It's something. Really. Yeah, it's something I never thought that I would ever be able to, you know, do actually, and then to be able to, like, you know, it just shows hard work pays off, kind of thing, you know. I never, ever thought that it would ever be anything other than a hobby. You know, I mean, I aspired to be something, you know, more than, aspired to be, to make it something more than a hobby, but I never really thought it was going to come together, and it seems within the last 4 years that it, you know, has really come together for me, and I, you know, really appreciate, you know, Mike Crosby giving me the chance to, you know, as a, I think I was 18 or 19 when I started up there, to become, you know, just thrown into the guiding world and, you know, learn as you go. And, you know, I was a frequent trout fisherman, and to, like, apply to, I just, it's such a good learning experience, you know.
Right.
Like, guides are supposed to know exactly how to catch the fish, but if you're not learning on the water, you're not, you know, you're not guiding or fishing, you know. So at the same time, I learned so much about fishing up there, and that's kind of like I like to give back. Like, some people are super secretive about things, especially other guides, but for me, I'm, you know, I want people to catch fish.
Awesome. I mean, it sounds like you've got a good handle on it. Obviously Mike, he knows a good thing when he sees it, so you know, it sounds like a perfect fit.
It's I fell in love with, you know, fly fishing at a young age, and it's pretty crazy to be able to, you know, do it professionally.
Awesome. Well, I mean, you know, it'd be interesting to see how things progress in the coming years, and, you know, I'm sure you'll be back up there and, you know, get more people into some nice big fish.
Oh, yeah. You never know what's going to happen. I could show up anywhere.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time to be on another episode of Maritime Outdoorsman, and you know, I never know, one of these days maybe I'll get up there.
Yeah, it'd be a pleasure to guide you, man. I think we could get into some big fish.
That'd be awesome. Anyway, thanks for thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So that was my conversation when I met with Chris Sinclair not so long ago. I want to thank Chris for taking the time to have that conversation with me. It's really fascinating to hear stories of guiding, I mean, fishing alone, but I think a guide's perspective on the experience is fascinating. So I hope you enjoyed that. Again, if you want to find the show notes for this episode, just go to maritimeoutdoorsman.com/027. And that does it for this episode. I don't want to let you go before I mention, if you are interested in finding out more about Crooks Lake Lodge or Flowers River Lodge, these lodges that Chris has been guiding at, you can do so just by going to labradorflyfishing.ca. That will take you to where you can find information about both of those fantastic lodges in Labrador. Plan your next fly fishing adventure with Crooks Lake Lodge or Flowers River Lodge. That's it for today, folks. I appreciate you listening. Take care, and until episode 28, have a great day.